Hey, everybody, are you hiring? Well, with ZipRecruiter.com, you can post your job to 100-plus job sites, including social media networks like Facebook, you've heard of that probably, and Twitter. You've definitely heard of that if you're listening to this podcast. And you can do it all with a single click. Try it for free with ZipRecruiter.com. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/bball. That's ZipRecruiter.com/bball. Hello and welcome to the CBS Sports Basketball Podcast. I'm James Herbert. Matt Moore is in Utah recruiting Gordon Hayward to join the CBS Sports NBA team. So with me is Chris Barnwall. How's it going?
Doing all right.
Just all right. You're not psyched? Right. Come on, this is your first appearance on the pod. I need energy.
I am excited. How about that?
There you go. That's what we want to hear.
I think just some of those news today, I think, got me a little down.
What news?
All NBA defense. We're better than this. We're better than this.
Which part stuck out to you? Was it the fact that Isaiah Thomas got a single vote for all NBA defense?
Him and Lillard, those were the ones. I was also not pleased. I didn't think Batum should have been on there either, because I watched a lot of Charlotte last year, and he was definitely not as important as the rest of their defense. But those two, Lillard and Thomas, were the big ones, where it was like, why? We're better than this.
Like, was that just an accident? Was it a troll move?
And the problem Go ahead.
No, the problem is we don't have the list of the voters yet, so we can't tell who did it. We can't call people out yet.
Watch it be Matt. Watch it. We're just going to totally rip his votes right here on the podcast, and he's going to be like, those were mine?
I have no problem with ripping Matt's votes while he's not here. He voted for Scott Brooks for Coach of the Year, and I'm sorry, that's just wrong. He was not the Coach of the Year. Take that, Matt.
You're going to hear a lot about that whenever he's back.
He's not going to listen to this.
I heard he listens to things when he's not around.
All right, well, come at me, Matt. I don't care. It's totally fine. We can argue again once you're back from your lovely vacation. So I do want to start with the two big events in basketball. One was last night, but is only going to air on television tonight. And one is tonight, and they're both firsts. So I want to ask you, Chris, what are you more excited about? The inaugural edition of the Big Three, three-on-three basketball, or the NBA Awards?
Oh, jeez. can I pick reading a book? probably the Big Three. I can at least see some, like, old NBA guys that I used to like when they were still young and awesome and, like, reminisce a little. I personally can't stand award shows in general, and I think the NBA having an award show is one of the worst ideas they've ever had. But not only that, this is, like, just so poorly executed. It's terrible.
It can't be worse than, like, the player awards, though.
Oh, the player awards were the worst.
Be professional. Like, I think it's going to look like an award show.
Right, because they got NBA, they got the NBA running it, they have Turner's taking part, and I'm sure Turner's, like, studied up, which their TV station, so they'll probably know how to run one. But
they got Drake hosting it, they got Minaj performing, like, they're trying to make this into a big thing. I don't know that it's going to work, but I think, and I mean, we can get to this with the Big Three, too. The one thing I really did appreciate about the Big Three is it did not feel amateurish. It did not feel like some kind of circus or a joke, even though I think there was a lot of skepticism about how seriously to take it, and that might persist. It was pulled off in a very professional manner. I was there last night, and I think the NBA Awards are going to be similar. Like, I don't think they're going to mess around with this. I don't think TNT is going to, like, mess this one up.
Yeah, I think it'll at least be, like, well put together and well done, which I do appreciate that. Like, if you're going to do this, at least try. Do it well. Like, don't waste everyone's time with it. Don't waste the NBA players' time. Like, because as much as my biggest problem with it is that we're having the awards this far after the season. But, like, these awards still matter. Like, MVP still matters. Sixth Man of the Year still matters. So, like, at least make it still matter in the sense of, like, take it seriously. I just wish if we were going to do this, like, ridiculous award show, that we did it after the first week of the playoffs, or, like, between that little break we have between the conference finals and NBA finals. Like, no one cares about the MVP award right now, like, which is ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, it's been so long since it seemed like that was a conversation, right? Like, I had how many discussions on podcasts about, like, the value of Westbrook's triple doubles versus the winning percentage of the Rockets, or what Kawhi Leonard's defense should be valued at compared to Westbrook and Harden carrying their teams, or like where does LeBron fit in and all of that stuff. Like, that was all so long ago. That was before the playoffs even began, and I know that we kind of almost like relitigated the award race once LeBron James was just killing the entire playoffs, and when we found out that he was left off of a ballot for all NBA and he wasn't even in the top three of this. But just in general, it's such a strange feeling that we're going to be honoring the guys who were best in the regular season when the regular season ended in late April.
And honestly, like, for most people, like, we just have the draft. The draft is, like, the unofficial start of the next season. Most people are already thinking about next season. So, like, awards from last year, like, it's not going to happen, but how funny would it have been if someone got traded and won an award for what they did with the previous team? Like, what if Lou Williams had gotten traded on draft night and then won Sixth Man of the Year? Like, how funny would that be?
What if Jimmy Butler had an actual team around him last year and then would have been an MVP candidate, and then we'd be talking about him.
MVP of the Bulls while he's in Minnesota.
They should have an award for, like, recent, like, just, like, best draft night, and then Tom Thibodeau walks up there and accepts the award, just to keep it current. Are you aware that there is a Teammate of the Year award that is different than the Sportsmanship Award? This is going to be the first year that there's a Teammate of the Year award.
Do the players vote on it?
I think so. I would assume it's the Teammate of the Year award. It would be stupid for us to vote for it, yeah.
I didn't know it existed. I mean, I guess that is kind of interesting being done, because then you kind of get an idea of, like, who players really respect. But we saw with kind of the All-Star game that doesn't always work.
Yeah, it's... I mean, the player awards and then the All-Star voting... I don't know, man.
They just vote for
the
friends.
I'm curious to see... Yeah, I'm curious to see what will happen, but I think, you know, they've added a bunch of these awards. Like, there are a bunch of fan voted awards this year, like Best Style.
That one's weird.
I'm sure Westbrook will value that trophy just as much as his MVP trophy after tonight. And like Best Playoff Moment, again, to keep things current. But it's just going to be strange to see, like, what kind of, like, skits and segments they have to fill time. Because even with those, like, there aren't enough awards in this to compare this to, like, any of the, you know, like, the Oscars or the Grammys or anything. Like, there just aren't that many categories. So I'm not sure how this broadcast is going to work. But, you know, I guess that Teammate of the Year award will kill 4 minutes.
I will say one way they can kind of say this. The NBA has this unique ability to it where it has the most personality of any other professional sports league, in my opinion. Maybe European soccer can have an argument against that, but I think if they get the players to do skits, like, have you ever watched the ESPYs, how they have, like, the little pre-made videos and stuff that kind of, like, this is SportsCenter commercials?
Yeah.
If they do some, like, funny skits, like, if they get the Foot Locker guys in there and, like, make some of those really funny Foot Locker commercials, like, if they bring out the players' personalities, this could go really well and actually be more than just another award show. Like, it could be a chance for DeMarcus Cousins and Anthony Davis and everyone to, like, really just kind of show off, like, oh, we have personality. We're more than just basketball-playing robots.
That's a really good point. I wonder if they have writers. Like, you know, like, all those other award shows, they hire people to do this to try to make these celebrities seem funny. And I don't know, like, I don't know what's gone into this thing.
We don't really know anything about it other than it's an award show meant to honor the awards, and it's the first one.
Yeah, so we'll talk about this more after it actually happens. I want to get to the big three. I was there last night. I had a really good time. And I think I'm kind of the sweet spot in terms of, like, the audience for this, because you need to be a basketball nerd, but you also can't be that snobby about the quality of competition. So, like, if you're like me and you're happy to go watch hours of summer league basketball, then you'll also enjoy the big three. I mean, you'll get to see, hey, Jermaine O'Neal can still dunk, or, like, Ricky Davis is still just launching jumpers everywhere. And it was cool to see Iverson get the, like, incredible ovation that he got in Brooklyn, even though he can't really play right now. He played 9 minutes and he was winded and he wasn't good. Like, he hit one jumper and the place went crazy. Like, he had just dunked on three people, but in fact it was an open mid-range jumper, and like a minute earlier he'd gone for a layup and it had hit like glass, no rim, and it was kind of sad. But I think as far as the first day went, like, it was a packed house. the crowd was really into it. I think asking them to watch four games was kind of a lot, but most people did stay till the end. And I think because it's a traveling tour and you're only going to see like one day each time, it's sort of like you're going to a basketball festival. I think that makes sense. I think if you were asking the same people to go see this multiple times, it wouldn't happen. But for one day a year, I had a good time.
I heard that at one point though, like the crowd started booing because of the quality of the basketball, which I don't know what they were expecting.
Yeah, there were a few boos. It was actually, I think it was in that Iverson game. It was in the third game, which was a downer. The first two games came down because you play till 60. So, like, you're guaranteed if it's a close game that you're going to get the equivalent of a buzzer beater. Like, you're going to see a game-winning shot in a close game. And the first two games were like that. And then the third game, it was just not as entertaining, not as competitive, not as close, and I think after a few bad possessions there were some boos. But I didn't get the sense that in general people were upset with the quality of basketball. I think the players were a little iffy on the fact that it was just so physical and they were hand checking and grabbing and holding, and some of these guys weren't in like amazing shape, and a lot of guys were talking about cleaning it up for next time. But in terms of the quality of basketball, I mean, it's different. It's 3-on-3. It's like, if you're an offensive player, you have a lot more room to operate. And if you're a defensive player, your best strategy is to just foul the other guy and hope that the referee doesn't call it.
There's
no help coming. Yeah. but look, I'm curious to see how many people are actually going to watch this thing. It's on tape delay, but I'm not sure people really care about the results of that match anyway. But yeah, it's on TV tonight. It's going to be the same format for the next 10 weeks. All the games will happen on Sunday. The games will be played on Fox Sports on Monday. And I don't know if people are really going to care about this as much 6-7 weeks from now, or like 9-10 weeks when like the playoffs and the finals are. But it seems interesting to people. I mean, I was getting a lot of, like, when I was like tweeting about it, people seemed to like care what was happening and ask why it wasn't live.
It's definitely an interesting thing that I'm like, I want to kind of pay attention to. I don't know how interested I would be to actually go watch it, but at the same time, like, I think it is cool to see some of those older guys that you haven't really gotten to see. Like you mentioned, Jermaine O'Neal actually still being able to dunk, Allen Iverson having his moment. Like, I think that's a little cool, getting to see players that you really weren't, like, you kind of maybe forgot about too. Like, I don't think most people remember Smush Parker outside of his incidents with Kobe back in the day, or Jason Williams, who, from what I heard, he got hurt, which that's sad, but apparently
Jason Williams got hurt, then Corey Maggette got hurt, and then the last game, Kenyon Martin pulled his hamstring. Like, it was...
That's concerning.
That's kind of worrying, yeah. And like, as it was happening, I was thinking, like, that might not be that surprising, that you have a bunch of, like, late 30s, early 40s guys who have probably, like, most of them look like they had at least been training for this over the past like few weeks or months. Like, most of them did. They were the odd guy that looked like he just wasn't in shape at all. But like, it's just when you haven't been doing it consistently, like, your body's not ready for this.
Right. Like, a lot of these players, like, if they were NBA, when they were in the NBA, they didn't work out then because they used the NBA to keep themselves in shape. So I don't know if they kept working out well. Yeah, some of the more recent guys, like, I'm pretty sure Rashard Lewis actually probably showed up in shape, which some of the more recent guys might have actually, like, you know, worked hard to stay in shape, or they've been playing. Well, then you have players like Allen Iverson, Iverson's obviously on the older side, but, like, I doubt he's been working up his basketball shape, which is why he's more of a coach than a player. But
yeah. I thought it was unfair they had Xavier Silas playing. He's 29. He played overseas last year in the D-League. Like, he's just a normal
basketball
player.
That might
player.
Be a good idea, though. Because I guess it depends. Are you doing this for the spectacle, or are you doing it for the how quality do you want this? Do you want it to just become like, because you kind of need at least some quality basketball to keep it a little interesting. But I guess you want to keep it a spectacle. Like, maybe go get the professor or something. Like, I'd be in for that. Like, combine Big Three with And One.
See, that's where it's interesting, because I think they could have gone that route. And they deliberately didn't get any street ball guys involved. They didn't want this to seem like the Globetrotters. They didn't want this to seem like the mixtape tour. They wanted it to be a competitive league. And, like, I don't know that I'd really refer to it as a league. Because Yeah, I know it's structured that way, and there's going to be a playoffs and all that, but I think in terms of, like, the fan experience, like, it doesn't feel like a league, it feels like a show. But the games are real. There's no, like, playing to the crowd and, like, doing these, like, crazy illegal dribbling moves. Like, there are referees, they're competing hard, and the teams want to win. And I think that's actually, like, the kind of impressive aspect of it is, like, the guys did seem to really care. And, like, they were trying on defense because they didn't want to get embarrassed more than anyone else.
They're competitors. Like,
yeah,
a lot of these guys who were NBA players or former NBA players or recently removed NBA players, like, you don't reach that unless, like, you're the most competitive person alive. So, like, yeah. I think if you threw them into any pickup situation, they'd be playing like that. Then you put them in a league that's going to be on TV in front of people, like, that's going to raise it up even more. You do not want to be on a Vine or whatever the new, like, short video thing is. You not be, want to be on one of those, like, on Twitter all over the place, being like, look at Mike Bibby getting owned by Ivan Johnson because he didn't want to try playing defense.
Right. But I think there is an alternate world where this was structured differently and it ends up looking like an all-star game. And that's not right. What it was.
Which is where you want to go, like, that's where you want to find that middle ground of how much do you want spectacle versus quality? Because you can't go full quality, otherwise you're just another knockoff minor league, and you don't want to go full spectacle, otherwise you're And1 or the Globetrotters.
Yeah, and I think they did a good job of, like, you know, it wasn't over the top, it didn't feel like a circus, but it was, like, really professionally run, and they had, like, videos that played on the Jumbotron to, like, explain the rules of this, like, weird league where there's a four-point shot that you can make, and, like, it was smart for them to have it right in between the draft and the NBA awards, especially the day before the NBA awards, because there were a bunch of players that showed up. They had celebrities that showed up. I mean, that's the advantage of having it in New York for the opening. And it did kind of feel like a big deal, and I'm not sure that it will 5 or 6 weeks from now, but I think it did start strong. And honestly, like, if you're not going to be a snob about, like, oh, here's this guy, like, missing this open jumper, like, there's, like, Michael Sweetney looking tired. Like, if you can handle just watching guys who used to be really good that are still, like, pretty good and playing in the half court so it's not as stressful on them, like, I think it's worth it. And it's not super overpriced or anything. Like, I think as a fan experience, I liked it. And in that respect, I think this could continue to be a viable thing as long as they keep getting a couple of big names every year. Because I think the fact that they were able to put Iverson, like, on the marquee, so to speak, and make him the face of this, that attracted a lot of the people that showed up. There were a ton of people in Iverson jerseys. And at a certain point, people are going to realize, oh, he's only playing, like, 10 minutes a game. And so who are they going to get next year? That kind of thing.
Kobe.
I mean...
Come on. This was made for Kobe.
Do you think he ever would?
If someone called him, if someone challenged him and he felt the need, I think he would.
Like, I would love
that. I think Ice Cube needs to just go out there and be like, Kobe's too soft now because he hasn't played in the NBA in a while. He should come to the Big Three and prove him wrong. Like, don't go full WWE, but, like, make a WWE spectacle of, like, the outside stuff.
I would love it. Like, I am not sure if this thing is going to get bigger and better every year, but if it does, I would love that. Because imagine you have, like, Paul Pierce and Kobe and KG and, like...
All the former stars playing it.
Yeah. Like, it'd be basically that would be like awesome.
It'd be basically like the Veterans League.
Yeah. But 3-on-3, so it's different. And I think, like, if it was 5-on-5, it would not have been nearly as good. Like, I think they were really smart to format it this way.
I also think that was a good idea, too, because the thing about 3-on-3 is, like, basketball has, like, this culture to it where, like, everyone that plays basketball has also played pickup, and, like, everyone understands 3-on-3. Everyone knows 2-on-2 is too small. 1-on-1 is just, like, you trying to show up your friend. 4-on-4 is too big in half court, and 5-on-5 you're supposed to be playing full court. So 3-on-3 is, like, that perfect middle ground. It's, like, perfect pickup-style thing, and everyone just kind of understands it.
So if I talked you into not just reading a book and actually paying attention to this thing, maybe?
Maybe. I don't know. Maybe. It doesn't help that my cable situation doesn't have Fox Sports 1.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's the biggest hamper. I would still watch this over the NBA Awards shows 5 times out of 5.
Okay. You'd still rather see actual competition than, like, a
then
random
Drake.
Celebration of basketball, whatever this is going to be.
I'm anti all award shows, so yes, 100% yes.
Okay. It is time for me to tell our listeners about ZipRecruiter.
Oh, yeah.
Because the key for any basketball team is getting the right talent and the right players on the floor, and it's really no different for your business, Chris. If you want to be successful, you need the right people. How do you find them? With ZipRecruiter. Use ZipRecruiter.com for hiring. We have a free offer for you. Try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/bball. You can't find the best candidates by posting your job on just one site. You need to post them on all the job sites. Now you can with ZipRecruiter, where you can post your job to 100-plus job sites with just one click. Then they match the right people for your position. That's why ZipRecruiter is different. Unlike other job sites, ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them. In fact, over 80% of jobs posted on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate in just 24 hours. You want that free offer? Well, our listeners can start forming their own winning team on ZipRecruiter.com for free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/bball. That's ZipRecruiter.com/bball. Try it for free today. So our next segment, I want to do quote of the day. This is from a certain center who just was traded to the Charlotte Hornets. At his opening press conference, he said, "I'm looking forward to doing whatever Coach Cliff wants me to do." That's Dwight Howard. Do you think that he's really excited about doing whatever Coach Clifford wants him to do, Chris?
I think he is excited about playing for Clifford again. He's not going to do whatever Coach Clifford wants him to do, because Dwight Howard has never done exactly what his coach wanted him to do. Ever.
Like, it doesn't seem like his MO. It seems like he has always wanted
to. How many chances is he gonna get?
I mean, I thought for the most part last season, he did a really good job embracing the smaller role for Atlanta. And then at the end of the year, when he wasn't playing in big situations, in the playoffs, because his team was getting killed when he was on the court, he comes out afterward and basically sets fire to the entire situation there, saying that he wasn't playing a big enough role and he wanted the ball and didn't feel like he could help, and all the same stuff that we'd heard from him before when he was in Houston and in LA and everywhere.
It's always just Dwight Howard, when he works, is just, he works. When he was good in Houston, he was great. When he was good in Orlando, he was great. When he's a disaster, like he was in Atlanta and Los Angeles, it just all goes wrong so bad. And, like, it's more than just the personality. It's, like, the way he plays. Like, he'll start doing those post-up, like, the post-ups, which I've said before that in Orlando he was not the terrible post-up player everyone thinks he was, but, like, he can't great. Do it anymore. He can't do it anymore. Like, at all. Like, ever since the back injury, he can't do it. So, like, there are going to be times where I think he will play in the pick-and-roll more in Charlotte. I think Charlotte's offensive system, at least from what we've seen the last couple of years, will fit him better. But there are going to be times where he posts up his guy, demands the ball, and it doesn't work. It'll be like, what was that possession? And it'll be like, we were just keeping Dwight happy. And that's going to happen a lot next year, because that's what he does. And just, he's had so many chances to prove that, no, I'm willing to just play the pick and roll screen and play to the team so many times now, and he's yet to do it. So maybe this time will be different. I doubt it.
Just, what does that do to you as an offensive player when you're just standing on the wing and you're watching a possession unfold, and it's clear that the only point of the possession is just to keep Dwight happy?
Like, when he's not even, it's not even Orlando, keeping Orlando Dwight happy. Like, if you're keeping Orlando Dwight happy, yeah, keep him happy all day long, because then the next possession, he's going to set a screen, go roll to the rim, and throw down, like, an amazing alley-oop. But, like, he can't do that anymore. And so all you're keeping happy is an overpaid big man where not only has his athleticism left him, but time has kind of moved past him in a lot of ways, too.
So here's the big question. He said he's looking forward to doing whatever Coach Cliff needs him to do. Do you think that Coach Clifford needs him to shoot three-pointers next year?
No. Clifford has never had any of his centers shoot three-pointers. I think Al Jefferson shot one once, and it was the greatest thing ever, but...
Wait, did that really happen?
I'm pretty sure I think he shot it and made it. I think it was like a buzzer beater. Wow. Double-checking this right now, but I'm fairly sure he shot a three-pointer and made it when he was in Charlotte.
That's fantastic. And
3-point attempts, totals. He made 3 out of 15 in his very first year in Charlotte. 2 of 5. Yes, 15 attempts. 2 out of 5 in his second year, and then he didn't attempt any. Ooh, he attempted one last year with Indiana.
All right, so Dwight Howard said he was going to work on his three-point shot this summer. He said this, like, about a month ago. And he said that's just the way the game has changed. He was on the jump on ESPN, and this is actually a little bit of a repeat of comments that he had during last season when I think he was talking to Doug Gottlieb, perhaps. And we all kind of wondered whether or not he was joking. He sounded serious the second time. So I remain very curious about if we're going to see Dwight Howard trying to space the floor in the preseason and how the hell that can work when he's never even been a good free throw shooter.
That's the big thing. Like, with a lot of these big men that's like expanded three-point shooters later on, like, they usually had a free throw stroke that made us go, you know, if that's possible, or at least like a long two that made us go, like, you know, maybe that's possible. Like when Al Horford started to add one, it didn't sound crazy. When Rasheed Wallace used to shoot them way too much, like it wasn't crazy. It was annoying, but it wasn't crazy. Dwight Howard has made a total of 5 3-pointers his entire career. Even that sounds high, to be honest. So
yeah,
like
more than I would have expected.
Where do you think he made the most, like, out of his entire career, out of all his teams?
I'm guessing Orlando, just because he stayed there the longest.
Houston! He made 3 in Houston.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, no idea.
They do love to launch threes there, but that's weird.
D'Antoni Magic.
I don't want to write off the Howard Hornets thing before it starts. I think it could work. Yeah, like, he honestly played really good defense, and he rebounded really well in Atlanta. It just, the effect he had on the team's offense and just the identity of the team, it made it not worth it, especially for what they paid him. But that doesn't mean he was just bad all around. He is still one of the better, like, and smarter interior defenders in the NBA. And that's something that Clifford was talking about today, was his intelligence. Like, he knows how to play team defense. He knows how to play pick-and-roll defense. He used to be the best in the league at that. He's not really that anymore, but he's still pretty big, and he's still an awesome rebounder, and he can help them in those areas. I just wonder if it will be any different than Atlanta in the big picture, though. Like, I wonder what happens to that offense when he's not really spacing the floor. Although maybe he will, but I don't expect that. And I wonder what happens when the offense bogs down because he wants touches or whatever. So it's not really the personality stuff that bugs me. It's just, I don't know if like the totality of the Dwight Howard experience is worth it anymore, but I'm willing, to be proven wrong in that respect. Like it in terms of just playing the role, which is what he says he'll do. Like, if he does that, it could be okay, right? It could be okay?
Yeah, it could totally be okay. Like, this is, I thought Atlanta would be a decent situation for him, but honestly, this might be the best situation for him on a team built, like, in a team format standpoint, like, their scheme, since he was in Orlando. Not just because Steve Clifford coached him in Orlando, but because the way Charlotte's played defense so many years, like, they play a very conservative style, which lends itself well to rim protectors like Howard. And Charlotte made a poor defender in Al Jefferson look fine, so when you take an actual good defender like Howard, like, theoretically, that'll work. And Cody Zeller last year was excellent protecting the rim, and now you have, like, a true rim protector there, so that can also work. The offense will be a problem, but Charlotte's situation for so long has always been, we are going to win games on defense, and we'll be okay on offense. We're going to shoot a lot of threes to make up for how poor we usually are on offense, and that's typically worked. So while he's going to bog down their offense at times, they really don't need him to, as long as he's not bogging down entire games, like, the offense isn't going to be that great anyways. That's one of Clippers' probably biggest issues, except for the one year where they, except the most recent time they went to the playoffs, they typically haven't had a great offense. They've always relied more on their defense. But as long as Howard isn't bogging down the entire offense to the point where, like, it's 29th in the league, which I don't even think he can do that because he's not terrible. Like, he still plays in the pick and roll sometimes.
Yeah.
Like, I think it can work because maybe I just believe in Steve Clifford so much because, in my opinion, he's an excellent coach.
Yeah, and, yeah, Steve Clifford's great. Great. And if anybody can reach Howard, it's Clifford. That's what everybody's been saying since this trade happened. Okay, the headline of the day. The Timberwolves still want to trade Ricky Rubio even after getting Jimmy Butler. This headline is taken from CBSSports.com. I'm exhausted. I don't know how to talk about Ricky Rubio trade possibilities anymore. I've done this for years. I love this new configuration of the Wolves team. I'd love to see Rubio get these guys open. I'd love to see him force turnovers and find these guys on the break. When you have that many guys with a scoring mentality, you need somebody who's a passer. I get that there's a big shooting issue now. And Rubio is a large part of that problem. But unless you're replacing him with, like, somebody who's about as good in the other areas, which is pretty hard to find, then, like, you might not actually be improving your team by going and getting a better shooter. That's about all the analysis I can muster of the, like, 29th Ricky Rubio rumor. What do you think?
It's just, I honestly, I'm at the point where I'm not going to believe he's going to get traded until he gets traded, because, like, I feel like he's been on the trade block for 5 years now, and he's only been in the league for six. Like,
he is the new Brook Lopez. Lopez, yeah, is gone.
That's what I said when Brook Lopez got traded. Like, he's the new king of the trade rumor. Like, he's always in rumors every year. Like, it never fails. Like, Ricky Rubio is always on the trading block, and until he actually gets traded, like, this is like, what are we doing here? Why does this keep coming up? Why do they keep putting him on the table? Like, are they actually offering him on the, like, is he demanding trades secretly? Are they actually offering trades? Like, why is this a thing that constantly comes up every year and he never actually gets traded? Like, it's just, it boggles my mind. As far as fit goes, I actually talked to a couple of Wolves writers and they're pro-trading him, which is funny because usually they've been anti-trading him, but with the new fit, they're more inclined to want to go after some shooting. But they also don't want to give him away for nothing, which maybe that's why he hasn't been getting traded, is like, because Minnesota has a large value for him, but his lack of shooting has made him difficult to move. That's my only guess as to why they haven't been able to move him, if they're so inclined on moving him every year.
He's probably one of those players that always seems more valuable to your team when you have him, because you see what he does defensively on the glass, passing, just what a great teammate he is, the energy that he brings when he really has it going. Like, you see that every day, and you want him around. Where other teams might just be like, oh, well, he can't shoot.
So, right. It's like, I'm not giving up my valuable player for a guy that can't shoot.
Yeah. And I will say, like, the second half of last season, he was much more aggressive on offense. He shot better, but I think more importantly, he shot more confidently, and that's always been the issue with him. And I think that was really encouraging. If they do keep him, that's what they should be looking to build on. And if they don't keep him, then, like, you better have a good replacement, man. Like, if they get George Hill, I understand. If they somehow get the cap space to go and make Kyle Lowry an offer, then I understand. Short of that, like, I don't know. Like, I don't know how much of an upgrade, like, a Drew Holiday would be. I don't know if Patty Mills would be an upgrade over Ricky Rubio, even though Patty's obviously a way better shooter. I think
just, like, the other things that also matter.
Yeah, with the guys they have on this team, I think you need somebody to, like, run the team. You need somebody to have a good passer. If you don't, then you need, like, an offensive system that forces all the other guys to move without the ball and make the proper passes and all that. So
I wonder if that's what they're going for, because I remember last year, like, it can befuddle me many times when watching them how, like, instead of having Rubio run the offense, they would typically just go stick him in a corner and have it go through Towns, and I'm not sure if that was just to have Towns develop more, or if their actual plan is to run him as, like, a point forward rather than, and using their point guard almost in, like, a triangle-like system where the point guard's playing more off-ball, which, in that case, I don't know why you wouldn't want a stronger defender like Rubio, but I guess, again, the shooting matters.
I mean, they did that a lot with Wiggins, too. Like, they tried to make him into a creator at the expense of Rubio a lot of the time, and I think Rubio got more involved later on in the season, and that's a philosophical thing, right? Like, if Thibodeau decides, okay, I want to run my team like the Utah Jazz, where the wings, in this case, it would make sense because your wings are now Jimmy Butler and Andrew Wiggins, which is awesome. But if he decides, like, I just want the wings to be the guys that are creating the offense, and we can also use Towns as a facilitator because he's amazing, then okay, like, philosophically, I could buy that. And at that point, maybe you don't want Rubio because you just want a 3-and-D guy instead of just a defensive guy and whatever. at point guard, I can understand it. But I think that that's where it's like, okay, so who are they actually going to target for that replacement role? And they don't have anybody waiting in the wings anymore because Dunn is gone and Tyus Jones is not that guy, even though he can be a fine backup. So I'm curious to see what happens there. As I said, I'm also tired of talking about him being in trade rumors because I think it's like actually harmed his reputation, and I think at times it might have affected his confidence. I mean, it's been basically since the day that he signed his extension that he's been in trade rumors, and I think that the entire time he's been a really good NBA player. It's just that that one flaw stands out to the point where people talk about that instead of the fact that he's good at literally everything else there is to be good at.
Now, Will Sands might want to skip ahead 15 seconds here, but hear me out. Ramon Sessions.
That's your answer?
He's on the block. He's on the block. I'm not.
I guess, him yeah, or Derrick Rose. That is the latest report. That's the big news today, right? The other headline?
Yeah, Ramon Sessions is on the block, apparently. Either that or he's getting waived.
Although I think, I don't even know if that was a headline. Did we decline to post that story? I think we might have.
We said let's just wait on it because it's probably going to actually happen later. Because okay. His contract guarantees soon, apparently.
I can understand that. Wait for the actual Ramon Sessions news to happen. Don't post on the Ramon Sessions.
Don't jump ahead. What if they keep him? I mean, that's a very valuable piece in Charlotte.
Sure. Okay, so I have a couple of other things I want to get to. I think we might have to scrap one segment we planned and just skip to listener questions, though, because we have some good questions. The first one is from Dharma, at Mind of Dharma. What do you see Denver giving up in this three-team trade for Love and Paul George? And my answer would be not Nikola Jokic, not Jamal Murray. Pretty much take your pick of whoever else is on the team.
I would try to keep Gary Neal if I can, because Gary Gary Harris. Yes, Gary Harris, thank you for that correction. Gary Neal.
I think you could get Gary Neal.
Get Gary Neal and trade him. Yeah, I would definitely. I'd try to keep Gary Harris if you could. If people want Fareed, which apparently Cleveland wants Fareed, send him out. Like, I have nothing against Fareed, but I think he's a very movable piece that doesn't really fit what they're building there.
He actually played really well with Jokic, which is interesting, but I think long term, I don't think they're committed to him at all. I'd want to keep Harris too. I think he's really good, and people in Denver all freaking love him for good reason. But like, you have to give up something to get a star player, right? Like, I don't know that they'll have the choice to just be like, all right, we're getting rid of like Wilson Chandler and Kenneth Fareed, who everybody knows we're not like planning on keeping as a part of our core anyway, and a pick or two. Like, I don't know that that gets you a star. And Kevin Love is, as divisive as he is now, is still unquestionably a star.
Do you like him playing next to Jokic?
On the offensive end, I love it. It's the other end, but I mean, they were already the worst defense, right?
Yeah, so, like, they literally can't get worse.
So I don't know. I don't know how you end up having a good defensive team if those are your front court guys. But I mean, what I will say is, as we saw, particularly in the playoffs, but I think it was evident even before then, despite the fact that the Cavs team defense was generally bad. Like, Love is not a bad team defender. He can be in the right place at the right time. He actually has good hands, as we saw in the playoffs with all the deflections and steals that he got. It's just he's not a rim protector, and you can't switch him onto small guys. And Jokic doesn't do those things either. So I think you would want a really good, like, defensive 4 or 5 to come off your bench if you had those guys. And once you're in the playoffs, there might be difficult situations where you have to bench Kevin Love, just like Cleveland sometimes did. But I think at that point, like, that is a good problem to have, because for the Nuggets, they just want to, they want to have those first class problems, right? Like, they want to be in the playoffs. There, it's been so long, and they just want somebody to get fans to come to the arena and somebody to make the team more competitive. So I kind of get it.
Yeah, I get it. Like, I don't think putting Love and Jokic next to each other is a bad thing, because they're both incredible passers and they're both great scorers. And we kind of focus too much sometimes on how does the talent fit, when sometimes you just need talent. And Denver's in a situation where they just need talent. Put talent on the roster and figure it out later, because they have a lot of young talent, but they like, the talent already doesn't fit already, and some of it's not all that great anyway, so, like, just go get really good players, go get something to put next to Jokic, and then figure it out later and build a team around that.
So, Dharma had a follow-up question. How does Love fit in Denver's long-term and short-term plans? And I think you sort of just answered it. Like, short-term, he'll make them awesome offensively. Long-term, you kind of figure it out later, right? Like,
right, like, if he doesn't work, you trade him.
Yeah.
Because yeah. I think Jokic's ceiling is probably a little higher than he is right now, right?
Yes. Yes. I mean, Jokic has, like, superstar, but he's ridiculous. He's absolutely ridiculous.
He makes a one pass a game every game that makes you go, oh my god, did he really just do that? Like, once a game.
I mean, he thinks like a point guard. And that, like, that's a lot of these guys who have, like, growth spurts when they're in high school, like, I don't know, like Justin Patton or something, going from, like, 6'1 to, like, big man size, like 6'11 or whatever he is now. People say, like, oh, he plays like a wing. And it's like, well, there's, like, having some guard skills, and then there's, like, Nikola Jokic, who sees
actually
stuff
playing
like
a
nobody
wing.
Else. Yeah, like, nobody else sees this stuff. All right, so that was asked and answered. From Matthew Hollister at Keystone Matthew, is it just me, or are all the free agents Houston is rumored to be pursuing terrible fits for their system? So let's see, who are we talking about? We're talking about Kyle Lowry, Chris Paul, Paul Millsap. Was there another one?
I feel like we're forgetting someone big. Rockets free agents. let's just start with Chris Paul while we figure out the rest. Chris Paul, I don't like that fit at all, personally. Again, I just said that, like, sometimes getting talent on the team is more important than actually caring about, but Houston was yes. already great last year.
Yeah.
And I don't think that you want to take the ball out of James Harden's hands and give it to Chris Paul. Not that Chris Paul can't make him work, but James Harden is just so much better with the ball in his hands than he is off ball that I don't understand why you would ever even consider taking it away from him.
I mean, it would be such a weird fit. Like, they would, both of those guys would have to make a commitment to just being okay with not having the ball in their hands, like, half the time. And I do think it's kind of cool that, like, for 48, like, if they stagger their minutes, like, for 48 minutes, they're always going to have one of those guys in charge of the offense. Like, that appeals to me. But it's just such a strange fit. Like, the James Harden and Jeremy Lin thing didn't work because Harden just needed the ball. Like, the reason why Patrick Beverley has been such a great compliment for him is that all he cares about is playing defense, and then he can be a secondary playmaker if he needs to, but most of the time he's just shooting threes and cutting. Chris Paul is not that guy. It makes sense from a talent collection standpoint. I think there's no way that he would just make them a worse team. But I think if you were just saying, like, hey, who do we want for a Mike D'Antoni-style basketball team where James Harden has a ball in his hands? Like, I think that's the genesis of this question. And I think, yeah, Chris Paul doesn't fit in. And the other guys, the fourth guy that we didn't mention was Blake Griffin.
He got, like, they tried to trade for Paul George, too, on draft night. That got rumored.
Yeah, there was that. But I think George makes a little more sense. Because he's a really good three-point shooter, and he's an awesome defender. And he doesn't, like, I don't think it's getting your full value out of him if he's just on James Harden's team. But you could reconfigure the offense a little bit and run stuff for him within the framework of what they do. I think it is harder to integrate a guy like Chris Paul. It's harder to integrate a guy like Blake Griffin, who's a four who doesn't shoot threes, when, like, basically all Houston wants is to space that floor out. And then
I think Houston's problem here might be just that James Harden is so good with the ball in his hands, you don't ever want to risk taking it out. So, yeah. But the problem is most other secondary stars are also really good with the ball in their hand.
Yep.
So you really need to go after the Kevin Love types that just, they're okay playing without the ball in their hand and they're still really good. But the problem is, do those guys really push you over the edge enough, or are they even available? Which is why when we see them get connected to players like Chris Paul, Kyle Lowry, or Blake Griffin, it's like, eh, I don't know if that's really a good fit.
Yeah, and then Millsap is the other guy, right? And he's, like, defensively great, and he's a good passer. But if it's the James Harden show, he's not helping you that much on offense. Like, he's just not. because he's not an awesome three-point shooter. And otherwise, you would need him to be involved in a different kind of system. Like, I don't know. Like, again, I'm not going to sit here and say Millsap wouldn't help the team in any way. But I think there's a reason they went and gave Ryan Anderson all that money, is because he's, like, the perfect fit for what they're trying to do. And it's hard to, like, if they could find a Ryan Anderson who could also do Paul Millsap-y stuff, they'd go get him. But I'm not sure that player exists. And since Millsap would be such a huge step down in terms of the floor spacing department, like, I don't know how much of an upgrade that is if they continue to play the way they could play, the way that they play. And that's the thing. It's like, how much will, like, if they got a Lowry or a Griffin or a Millsap or a Paul, like, how much would Mike D'Antoni bend his playbook? I don't know the answer to that question.
That's another really good question, because we've seen D'Antoni in the past. Like, when he gets his team that he wants, he's awesome. But we saw in New York and LA that if the fit doesn't work, it can get really nasty really fast.
Yeah. And that's the thing. Like, it's so tough to be Houston, because they have this great formula, this great partnership with Harden and D'Antoni. We could see D'Antoni rewarded with Coach of the Year at the NBA Awards tonight. We could see Harden be rewarded with MVP, but probably not, but maybe second place. Because of just how well that worked in the regular season. But we're in a league now where the best teams have three or four stars on it. And you need multiple playmakers. And D'Antoni even acknowledged at the end of the season, when they lost in the playoffs, that they wanted to get Harden some more help. The question is what that actually looks like and how that help fits in. And if we go back to the four guys that they've been rumored to be targeting, Lowry might actually make the most sense. But I still don't know how he'd feel about being like a super Patrick Beverley, when he's been used to being the guy in Toronto running the offense. I know he relinquished some of that playmaking responsibility when DeRozan's usage rate just skyrocketed this season and Lowry was fine with sacrificing that way, but he still had the ball in his hands a ton. And I'm not sure that happens if he's next to Harden.
Yeah, you have to find a guy that's willing to take not only a reduced role, but you also have to kind of hope that Harden's willing to take it as well. And
Yep. You
need to find a way to, like, use these two guys together, which that might be Houston's biggest thing. Is like, if you're going to do this, you have to figure out how to make Harden useful off-ball offensively. Not that he's not, but just make him even better. Which, Yeah. If he is, like, oh my god, James Harden is going to be a Mecha Destroyer basketball player next year.
Okay, so from JP Lugo, would you rather scream instead of snore in your sleep or give up cheese for your whole life?
Oh, God.
I know my answer.
And I'm screaming.
Really?
I love cheese. Cheese is amazing.
I do, too. I'm obsessed with cheese. However, I couldn't be a functional person. My marriage would fall apart. My life would crumble if I was just screaming all night when I was sleeping. And,
well, see, I don't know if I snore that much.
Well, I think it was implying that it was just going to happen.
Well, yeah, sometimes, I mean, don't you ever, maybe I have night terrors and I scream already and I have no idea.
Like, it's possible. I think this is implying that you're going to snore every night. Except the snores will be replaced by screams.
Huh. Maybe this is also influenced by the fact that I'm on a diet right now where I cut out carbs. And that means, like, cheese sticks are, like, my go-to snack because it's just nothing but protein and they're delicious.
I thought you were going to say cheese is all I have.
Cheese is all I have. Like, I'm worthless without my cheese right now. So without cheese, I don't know how I'll make do.
All right. That's a very good question.
Yeah, I'm screaming.
You're screaming, wow. Okay. I know, I applaud that, but I couldn't do it. My life would fall apart. From John Levinson, at Levy335 on Twitter, because Buddy Hield got more votes for all-rookie than Joel Embiid, does that make Buddy better than him? I want to be clear about this. Embiid got more, like, total points in the all-rookie voting than Buddy did, but 11 people left Embiid off their ballot entirely. Only 9 left Buddy off. I'm going to answer this. Obviously, it doesn't mean that. It doesn't mean anything. All rookie means nothing. If you go back and look at past all rookies, like, there have been really good players that have been left off. And everybody knows that Embiid is by far the best of last year's rookie class, like head and shoulders above everybody else. Just he only played 31 games. So some people didn't think he should be in the top three for rookie of the year. Some people, apparently 11 of them, left him off their ballot entirely, not even on the second team, which seems kind of crazy to me. But whatever, that's what people did. But this really doesn't matter. And everybody knows that Joel Embiid, if healthy, is a superstar. Do you have anything to add to that?
Hold on to that all rookie thing his entire career and never let it go. As Joel Embiid bursts into a star, just be like, yeah, but remember that time Buddy Hield was voted over him and all rookie? Just hold on to it and never let it go. Pettiness
also,
forever.
Shout out to Buddy Hield, looking at where he placed in all rookie. What a comeback. It looked like rookie season was a disaster, and then he was great in the second half with the Kings.
I think New Orleans is just a sad place to be if you're young right now.
Yeah.
I just don't think if you're a rookie, you want to go there.
Okay, from Sean Woodley of Raptors HQ. Dumb prediction question. Who finishes sixth in the East next year, assuming a Cavs, Celts, Wiz, Raps, Bucks top five, which may be dumb to assume? I think, look, it's hard to assume anything because we don't know how free agency and the trade season is going to work out. Like, if you just look at a team like the Celtics, we have no idea what Ainge might have up his sleeve. If you look at the Raptors, Masai Ujiri has already come out and said he has five different plans for what happens with the team, and it'll all be determined, first of all, by what Kyle Lowry decides to do. So it's hard to even say that's a top five, but I'm fine. I'm with you, Sean. We'll do that. I really want to say Philly would be sixth, but I can't. I can't make that leap.
They're still too young.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
That's what I want to say. But I'll say the Miami Heat.
I think that's a good one because really, if we're looking at the Hawks are going to fall off, the Pacers are going to fall off if they really do trade Paul George, which let's just assume that they're going to trade Paul George.
If the Pacers trade Paul George, I realize they haven't tanked like ever, but they could be horrendous.
Oh my God. They're going to be awful.
if this is just strictly for young players and draft picks, which it sounds like that's the priority. If that's what this is, it is going to be ugly. Because I don't think they're keeping CJ Miles. And if you look at the rest of the roster, like, it just doesn't make sense. Like, that's not a basketball team.
It's built entirely around Paul George, and even then, it's not much of a basketball team.
Yeah. So even then, they just squeaked into the playoff.
Right. So let's just assume they're trading Paul George. The Bulls just traded Jimmy Butler. So that really only gets us the Heat, the Pistons, and the Hornets. I'm going to go with the Hornets.
Wow.
Because I thought they were supposed to be good this year. And this is probably me being a little bit of a homer as a former Hornets blogger. Shout out to At The Hive. But I really think they were supposed to be good last year. They were bizarre. They had a positive point differential and still finished 11th. Like, they were supposed to be a good team last year, and they fell apart at the weirdest times. They were really strange.
I think last year something weird was going on with that team. They definitely should have been a lot better than they were.
Right. So I think that if I had to pick one, I'm going to go with them mainly because we don't know what the Heat are going to do yet. And the Heat went on that really weird run where they were terrible at the beginning of the year, then they were great the second half, and we weren't really sure which team were the real Heat. And like maybe the Heat, if the Heat go out and sign like Gordon Hayward or someone like that with free agency, then your pick is probably the correct one. I don't like the Pistons at all. I think that they're about to fall apart really bad.
The Pistons could go either way. Like, I think they're a couple of moves away from being pretty good, and they're also a couple of moves away from just being completely in the toilet. And I have no idea what they're going to do this summer. I don't know what happened to that team's chemistry last year. I mean, I kind of know. Everybody sort of knows what happened to the team's chemistry last year, but it was so dramatic. And it's just alarming how fast it went from like, oh, like they're cautiously and patiently building this like team that makes a lot of sense. All the pieces fit and they're not tanking. They're surrounding their core guys with guys that can play well next to them. They have multiple playmakers. They have spacing. They have a system, blah, 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 blah. And then suddenly it's like, whoa, they can't play together at all.
Like, not at all.
I don't understand how that happened. I think it's weird because I think there's like some revisionist history going on and saying like they've been making mistake after mistake from the start and they've given out all these bad contracts and stuff. I'm like, I'm not sure that's the case. I don't think a season like last year was predictable. I think it was far more logical to think they were going to be a playoff team, even a home court advantage playoff team last year, than to predict they'd be garbage.
I went all in on Detroit last year because I think Stan Van Gundy is awesome. I thought Reggie Jackson and Andre Drummond was going to be just a deadly pick and roll combo, and instead it was just all awful and terrible. Now I really have serious doubts about Andre Drummond as like a starting caliber center in the NBA, which that says a lot about like how far he fell last year.
Seriously.
And just, I really am not a fan of them at the moment, so I'm just going to stay as far away from Detroit as I can.
That sounds like the end of the podcast. We'll end it on a total bummer. Thanks so much for listening. This has been the CBS Sports Basketball Podcast. Our guest this week was Chris Barnwell from CBSSports.com. I'm James Herbert. Catch you next time.